Welcome to Passions for Life. Ha ha, I getcha. This is a voice that you're not used to hearing. This is producer Valentine. It's quarantine time here around the holidays. Happy holidays, by the way. And because we can't all be in the same room at the same time, it falls to me to walk you all through our year-end wrap-up. This is sort of, I wouldn't call it a best of, really. Just a summing up of what we've done our first season here on Passions for Life. It seems likely that we'll do two of these episodes over the holiday break while Natalie and Travis and Ben and myself are scattered to the four winds doing our different stuff with our families and so forth. In addition to summing up the first season for folks who already listened to the show, it's my personal hope that this can also offer as a where to start for people who are like, hey, should I listen to that show about that weird-ass soap opera that used to be on? Had the doll, the lady, all that stuff. So anyways, let's get right into it. So these first couple of clips are going to sort of set the stage. You've got Travis and Natalie talking about how they came to be on Passions in the first place 20 years ago. And then there's another clip of Ben, I love this clip, describing why it's difficult for him to watch and talk about this show. He'd never watched Passions before he started doing the podcast.
We should probably address how that came about for you, Mr. Schultz.
Yeah, how I made it to Harmony.
Your origin story.
Ethan Crane origin story.
Oh, man, I would love to talk about it.
But I'm not going to.
Well, I guess what I should start with is maybe the audition, casting.
Yeah, tell us about...
That's probably a good start. So I was living in Fort Worth, Texas, and I had managed to land an agent using one of my professors had hooked me up with the agency, and I went in on audition.
Which happens to everyone. You just land agents.
Yeah.
I auditioned.
It's that easy. Yeah.
I auditioned, and they liked me. So Passions did this, like, across the country casting thing. They went from California all the way to, like, Florida to Miami, where they got a lot of
People in Florida.
So they came through Dallas, and that's where my agent was. And they told me I had an audition, and I said, great, what's it for? And they said, a soap opera. And I said, no, thanks, I don't really want to do that. And then I thought, you know what?
Okay, Olivier.
I know. No, I was. I was like, no, I'm not going to do theater. I mean, soap operas. Right. I'm going to do theater. So I decided to do it, and I blew it. It was a terrible audition because I didn't know how to handle that material because it's very, you're saying characters' names over and over again, and it's there's no flow to it. Well, and it was very difficult. It's very difficult dialogue to do.
We used to liken it to reading something that was translated from a foreign language. It reads that. It's so there's like no flow.
Someone just learned how to speak English and started writing a script.
Right.
And you say their name every time. It's like, it's weird. So I failed, but the executive that was there, she was doing the casting, and I don't remember her name. And I wish I did, but she saw something in me, and she said, look, I'm just going to stop here. I'm going to turn on the camera, and let's just talk. So she started asking me about where I was from and, you know, how I got there and just my story. And I kind of loosened up.
It's very La La Land, isn't it?
When
she goes in and just, they're like, just tell us, give us a monologue.
Yeah, it's very La La Land. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, it's a great moment. And I just was like, okay, thank you. And she's like, that was great. It's good meeting you. And then I thought, no, I'm never going to hear anything. And then I got a call and they said they wanted to test me. So I was set to fly out to LA and test. And that's all I knew. And they gave me a scene. And this time I was determined not to fuck it up. So I went to my acting teacher from college and worked with her extensively and got it down really well. And then I flew to LA.
They flew you.
Yeah, they flew me.
This will come up again later.
Yes. Back in the day when you used to get that kind of stuff. I think you still do.
But that, I think when you're that green, it's so...
Oh, it was
huge. It's incredible.
Like, there was a stretch limo that pulled up to my house.
Yeah. I mean, just like, you're like, I've made it.
Yeah.
It's happening.
And you get off the airplane and there's someone with the sign
With your name, with your name on it. You were what, 24, 25?
20, 26? 24.
Yeah.
23, 24, I think.
Baby.
Yeah. I was young. And so they, I fly into LA. They took me to the Sheraton. Is that what it is?
The
Universal Sheraton. Yeah. Stayed in a room. Like got Aunt dinner.
Sheridan. Like Aunt Sheridan.
Yeah.
It should have been the first clue, Travis.
Yeah. It's spelled differently.
It is spelled differently, but you can't deny.
Sounds the same.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, let me, you know, I went out to just prove that I could do this. You know what I mean? I was stoked. It was
Did
like an opportunity.
Did you want to get the job?
I don't remember. I want to say no, because I was a snobby theater actor, but you know, it's one of those things, like, at first you don't want it, then someone says, we'd like to see you again. And you're like, well, I still don't want it, but I'm going to work hard. And then by the time you get there, you want it.
Yeah, when you've jumped
like,
through all
this. Like, yeah. It's so weird. So, yeah, I'm going to say I wanted it. And I went in, we went to NBC Studios, and we ended up shooting the scene on the extras set.
Extra, not the Ricky Gervais.
Right. That's what it was.
The extra
entertainment show.
Yes. Extra, yeah, the entertainment show. When it was, they Back actually had a desk. I think now they just like I don't know.
They do it from home.
Yeah, that's true. During this awful time. So they set up like a sofa and a thing, they hired an actress to work with me who was fantastic.
It was Frances McDormand.
It was Frances McDormand.
She is quite good.
She's really good, guys.
Very generous, I hear. Generous scene partner.
It was funny. God, blew me away.
Well, yeah.
No, it wasn't Frances McDormand. Again, another person that I wish I remembered, but she was fantastic and I nailed it. Like, I did it a couple of times and the director was happy. And, you know, I went home and back to the hotel. And then I remember my friend, Brian Stanton, who, we were in undergrad together, and he was at Cal Arts, which is a prestigious acting college. He was, doing, graduate school there. And he said, how'd it go? And I said, it went awesome. If I don't get the job, it's their fault. And he laughed and he's like, that's really confident, bro. And I said, yeah, it is. That's how good I felt. And he said, wow, okay. So I flew home.
Yeah, arrogant.
Yeah, very cocky, arrogant 24-year-old white male trying to be an actor.
R.I.P.
Yeah. Yeah, that guy's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, so and then I got the job. They called and I got the job.
So I was conflicted about whether or not I wanted to do this because I was doing – my career was okay. It certainly wasn't, you know, it wasn't winning any Oscars, but like Frances. But I was doing all right. Okay. So I was like, fuck it. Yeah, I'll do this. So here's what happens when there is a show that you're – soap that you're testing for that's already on the air.
Right.
You go – and this is had been my experience with all the shows prior. You go to the – soundstage where the show is taping, and they give you somebody's dressing room who's not working that day. So we had when Travis and I were on the show, we had people coming into our dressing rooms when we weren't there and like rummaging through our shit, through our nasty dirty ashtrays. But you can also watch on, they have closed circuit television, so you can everybody's got a TV in their room, you can watch what's being taped.
Oh, yeah.
So essentially you can watch the auditions that are happening as you're waiting to audition.
Well, yeah.
For the actor
in the dressing room, you can see where they are. So you know if so you're coming up or not.
Right. Yeah.
That's why they're there. That's why it happens. And anyone on that studio can watch it.
Yeah, anyone on the lot.
Yeah,
Big Brother,
on the studio lot can watch
Two and a Half Men.
Yeah.
I watched
and
Two and a Half Men tape scenes between Denise Richards and Charlie Sheen before they were a couple. And I remember thinking, I don't know why, I just stumbled upon it. I was like, I'm going to watch this. They didn't speak. They didn't look at each other. They were doing a bedroom scene where they were both in bed talking. And in between takes, they would just like look at their sides, not talk. They would not converse.
What show?
Two and a Half Men.
Oh.
So Denise Richards guest starred on it, and that's how they met. So I'm watching them, and I'm like, they fucking hate each other. And then a few weeks go by, and the story comes out that they're dating. Anywho, So I went to whoever's, I don't remember whose dressing room they gave me, but, and I think they may have blacked out the auditions for the sake of our, you know, just, you know, being kind. I don't remember. But I have watched other, I did watch other people audition.
Yeah, they don't do it with the main cameras. They did it on the side. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they built a set for you and everything for our scene.
Mm-mm. We were at Sheridan's Cottage. Oh, that was the second time.
Oh, that was the second time. We're only on the first time?
Yes, I'm sorry. Jesus, I know. I'm sorry. So
oh,
anyway.
Oh, I got so much time.
Anyway, any hoodle. It's a very different story from yours. So I go to the soundstage to shoot my scene, and it happens to be with this gentleman here. And he was so lovely. He doesn't remember this. He was so lovely and warm and very kind. And we did our scene, and our first kiss was during this crazy, weird screen test. And we hugged and said goodbye. And I went back to New York. And a couple of days later, I get a call that says I did not get the part.
So, which was a good thing, because they ended up not doing anything with that character.
What do you mean?
That it was a character. It was for a character.
No, it was for...
No. It was, wasn't a replacement.
No, it was. Travis, what's happening right now?
She wasn't replaced then. When you didn't get the job, it wasn't replaced.
Travis needs some ginkgo biloba.
It was to find a replacement.
Right.
But nobody... It didn't... No one got the job.
Right. No one... Oh, yes. Sorry. So no one got the job. Yeah, okay.
So it was...
Maybe I need the ginkgo biloba.
Yeah, wow. They did do another character. Like, they added a cousin or something like that.
No, this is where you're wrong.
So, let's continue with Natalie's audition odyssey.
Sorry, I know it's
odyssey.
It's an epic. I'm gonna. It's almost done. So a few weeks later, they call again and they're like, they'd like to screen test you again. And I'm like, motherfuckers, just quit throwing away the tape. I'm not gonna do anything different. So I came back with no intention of like actually doing well, because it truly was a trip to see friends and to hang out. So I show up and he's like, fucking you again. And this is the one you remember, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, my second impression is always so much better with everyone.
Well, yeah.
Okay, so I show up on set. This one is doing hay bales, like lifting hay bales naked from the waist up.
Took my shirt off, they had.
So it was like CrossFit?
It was pre-CrossFit. Is exactly what it was.
Man, Passions is really ahead of its time.
That's what this whole podcast is going to be about. We're going to discover so many things like this.
Yes,
CrossFit.
Cool.
CrossFit. And you were doing what I thought was Shakespeare. You were reciting Shakespeare from what I remember, but I guess it was Tom Stoppard.
It was just Tom Stoppard.
Okay, it was just Tom Stoppard.
Another fantastic.
Not any less pretentious, but go ahead.
No. Actually more, I would say.
Yeah. A little bit more.
So I walk Stoppard. In and this one's doing something, this wreath of fire and rose and whatever the fuck else. Oh, for a muse of fire. That's what I was trying to think. Oh, for a muse of fire. I know that's not Tom Stoppard.
Nope.
And it was just so nice. It was so nice to see a friendly face. And
it was. I was excited
to
see you.
He was just so fucking handsome. And we did the scene. Sorry, Ben. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to ask a personal question, but go ahead and finish the story. Then
okay.
I'll ask a personal question.
And we did the scene, and he was like, I was like, see you never. And you were like, yep. And then I finally, yes, gang, listeners, I finally got the job.
Yes.
Third time's a charm, I guess. Yeah. I cried. I cried when I got that phone call. Not tears of joy. No, I was a little conflicted.
Well, because then you had to move to LA.
I had to move and leave all my friends.
My friends.
Too cold in New York.
My boyfriend.
I know you don't like the cold.
Yeah.
I love the cold.
I only had to leave my parents' house.
Yeah, you were fine.
It was easy.
Yeah.
And my job at Papa Do's. I was good to go.
I'm sure they were sorry to see you go.
They were not. I was not a good waiter.
Okay.
Actually, that's not true. I finally got good.
So the thing about watching the first episode, I'm like, it feels like episode 100 because there's so much stuff going on that I have a lot of.
Yeah.
Were you lost?
I was.
Fantastic.
I was a little lost.
Wow.
I was like, these people have relationships that I don't understand.
Did you listen to how that's all we talked about? Like, we talked to each other. Each character is talking about other people.
Yes.
And their relationships. Yeah. Okay.
That would drive David Mamet crazy.
Crazy. Well, let's delve into this. And also, I do know David Mamet, and we could try and get him on the show.
Oh, that'd be great.
Let's do it.
All right. Interesting that you thought you were coming in on sort of the middle of these people's lives, because that's what makes, I think, a really great piece of entertainment and, yeah. and art, which this is not, let us be clear. So it's interesting that that's
they did a good job. Like, there's grudges and there's like moments and really cool guitar stings. For,
Yeah. Cause I think when you're, it's probably, it was a daunting task. I can imagine to say, we're going to start a soap opera. I mean, nobody did this. Right. No one's like, so you have to make the history of this town deep and dark and strange. And I mean, and it's also like there's the Salem witch stuff.
Right.
Well, hold on.
So it starts. So what I saw in the beginning, it's a town called Harmony.
Yeah.
And we talked about last episode. It's just dripping with irony.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like naming your boat the Live Forever. Yeah. And then my notes also say penny whistle, ! Jangly guitar, spin doctors, ?
It felt very spin doctors. Yeah. I think it was, we were at the end of that era.
Or maybe like 5-7 years too late. Anyway, that was the confusing thing. I was a little bit, I felt like I was behind the whole time.
Okay. Well, get used to that feeling.
Okay.
Because what I think what's going to happen with you, Ben is, I think you would agree. You're a cerebral guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a writer. You're an intellectual. You're a writer. You think things.
I like to think things through.
He's an intellectual.
Yeah. And so I think that you, and one of the reasons that you're great for this particular task is that you are probably going to try a little too hard to make this something that it's not.
We didn't think you'd be confused, but you got to start somewhere.
No, it's great.
Hey, this is Ben from Passions for Life, hoping you have a happy holiday. I think we all deserve one after the year we've had. And I hope you get everything you want this year for whatever holiday you celebrate. Even if that's a matching tracksuit, which is what I got, which is what I wanted. Have a great and extremely safe holiday.
I just remembered, guys.
Oh, let's hear it.
Fan letters. We're going to read some fan letters.
Because we have
a big box of them.
And do you want to know why we have a big box of them, Ben?
What?
Because they tell you, when this was years ago, they tell you, when you're on a soap and you get fan mail, to keep the mail, don't throw it out, because in case somebody murders you.
Oh,
yes. Wow.
These next couple of clips, the first one touches on Travis's first day on the show, which is a little bit of a longer clip, but is an excellent one, in my opinion, for showing you what it can be like to be just a kid being on TV for the first time. And then the second clip speaks a little to Travis and Natalie's impressions of themselves, watching themselves after 20 years. Also introduces what will be a recurring theme, which is Natalie and hair.
This is my first day on this job. I've never worked on a television show in my life. We're exterior on the beach. I sat in my trailer while a makeup artist rubbed from my forehead down to my toes, body
and into your butthole,
and not into my butthole, but basically massaged into my entire body, body makeup.
No butthole body makeup.
No butthole body.
That would be
makeup.
An OSHA violation.
I was so nervous, guys. I was freaking out, and I get on set, and I'm so nervous. And this fucking director, the first shot of the day, he's like, "Okay, Travis, you stand right in front of the camera. And I want you closing up your towel. It's your dick shot." And I've got this little, what do they call them? These little
dance belt.
Well, I didn't wear a dance belt. It was actually like privacy boxers. Oh. It was boxers, but they're like flesh colored. And this guy.
Oh, like Spanx, basically. But
right. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Spanx. And I'm like, I've never walked around in front of 50 people like this. Yeah. You know, it was so uncomfortable. And this is what the guy said to me. And I remember saying, "This is hell. This is hell." I was so nervous. I was so insecure. I was just, God. And then this director just made me look like a total douchebag in front of everybody. And everybody's laughing, making fun of me and stuff. And I was like, it was the worst day of my life in terms of work. It was the hardest. It was trial by fire. Yeah. I got sunburned on my back because if you noticed, I'm always on top of her. Mm-hmm. Liza was sunburned on her face because they touched up our sunscreen once.
Sure.
And because in that morning.
Why not?
Never reapplied. It took so long, and every time I messed up, it was like, all right, let's do. I mean, it was so gross so hard. And I went back to my room and cried. Like, I cried at lunch. And I was devastated. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, I wanted to leave. I wanted to quit. I wanted to quit and go home.
That's your first day.
That was my first day. First
professional acting.
Not professional acting, but first day on Passions. Like, okay. And I was a mess because it couldn't have gone any worse.
Yeah.
And after that day, I realized I could do anything in this town.
So from Sheridan's Cottage, we move on to the Crane Mansion, where
we see Travis Schultz as an actor struggling.
Listen,
I
if we're
say
gonna
that.
Hold on. If this is a competition,
I'm watching and I'm like, I didn't know I had a speech impediment at that time in my life.
Listen, did you mouth breathe to the point where you could barely watch yourself? Because I did. Like, close your fucking mouth, Z.
This is okay, Ben. I'm watching the episode. We're in bed together, and I open my computer and I start watching the episode, and Natalie goes, "Are you going to watch that right now?" And I said, "Yeah." And she goes, "You're not going to want to have sex with me ever again." Yeah, close my computer.
And I'm like, and then we have sex and it's fine. And that's the last time it will ever happen.
Yeah, exactly. And then we had sex. But I'm like, what are you talking about?
Now do you know?
No, I mean, I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
Because your hair is amazing.
Listen, we're going to talk a lot about hair.
I definitely got over a lot of obstacles in the years that I've known
you. You saw something in me that was not there yet.
I was in love with you.
Right. That's what I'm saying, though. Like,
what
I ended up being was something that you could somehow see in your, like, weird crystal ball. You were like, that girl's going to, like, come into her pretty around 2008.
You were pretty to me. You were
did
beautiful.
Did you watch the episode?
I'm not...
And this is not like, let's all give Natalie compliments. Like, I saw it.
I hung out with you more behind the scenes than I did.
So I guess
on
I
enjoyed
up
your personality.
Yeah.
Also, we joked and we joked. We had fun. We enjoyed each other's company. That's what I liked.
Wow.
I mean, I didn't walk on set and go, God, what was I thinking? She looks so stupid right now.
Well, you should have. Somebody should have said something. Because
I think the fans did.
The fans did, and they were not wrong. My mom did; she was not wrong. So I don't want to blast your thunder, steal your thunder, whatever the fucking platitude is. But Ben's writing down blast your thunder.
Shoot your wad.
steal your Malibu. Wreck your Malibu.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. But I was what the fuck with the hair.
Hello, everyone. Season's greetings. Happy holidays.
Merry Christmas.
We can happy still New say Year. It. Happy. This is what I was talking about with Val. This whole like conspiracy against saying it.
Anyway, we just wanted to say
yes.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening.
For listening, and in the tradition of the holidays, we wanted to sing you a little song.
We're gonna give back to you guys.
Yeah.
We do this. It's a little tradition that Natalie and I do. We make up a Christmas song or a holiday song.
Yeah, we've done it once before.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a really long running tradition. Okay.
5, 6, 7, 8. Oh, the holidays are a special time when everyone can get together. But not this time. Don't get together. It's going to turn out bad. Because if you get together, you're going to start to sneeze. And then you can't smell that wonderful meal.
And then Grandma and Grandpa will miss the next Christmas. And that'll be on you.
Merry Christmas, Merry everyone. Happy holidays.
Wow. Ben, is there something you want to point out?
I mean, I have all these comments. We could talk about them or not, but...
Well, we're doing a podcast, so maybe we should talk about it. I don't know. Why'd you come? It's not a recap show.
Some of them are very small and don't merit discussion. and I don't know what if we're still going place by place or chronologically.
What would you prefer to go chronological?
Let's just keep on going with the way we're going. I'll chime in when it's appropriate.
Oh, Ben, you're the best. The first of these next two clips touches on something that came up again and again on Instagram and Twitter and people writing into us, which was the double wedding. We thought the idea of a double wedding was hilarious. We said so. And then a lot of people reached out and sort of proved to us that double weddings are more common than we'd think, even if they're not exactly common. And in keeping with the sort of wedding theme, the clip immediately following discusses Travis and Natalie's friendiversary, which they experienced right here on the show.
Yeah. So the double wedding, huh? That's a thing.
It's a big thing.
It is not.
What do you mean it's not a thing?
There is not a woman on the planet who's like, you know what I want to do? Oh. I want to share my big day with some other bitch.
Okay.
Not one person.
I'm going to back you up on this because in my notes.
Oh, good. Yeah. Ben agrees.
Amy grumbles, has anyone ever had a double wedding ? Before leaving the room?
No.
Yeah.
No, that was a good exit line for
that's
her.
That's a good Google.
Yeah. That's a good Google.
double wedding
?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I love it. We're not a recap show, and I don't give a fuck about spoilers because it's been 10 years, but there's an actual double wedding that happened.
Well, I've seen that because you guys sent me there's something that happens with the car.
Oh, I sent that to you.
I'm just going to pop in. The phrase double wedding is so funny. It's just so it's incredibly. Like,
because it's not a thing.
No,
it's like an oxymoron.
No. Ah, yes, the double wedding.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, it's double wedding is a completely made up.
It's a completely phrased. Made up.
So,
thing.
Father John, what you have going on today at the church? 3 o'clock. We have a double wedding.
Double wedding?
No, you don't.
Another one?
No.
In quite a week.
I don't think so, Father.
Liar.
So
seems like every time you say that, you're actually going to the YMCA to watch the boys' basketball league.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you taking down the Catholic Church with this podcast?
Here we go.
Wow.
As we all know, Liza Huber was. And I'm sure she still is a blonde, and I'm not. And so they wanted to, I guess they thought they wanted to make me look as much like the character quote as they could. So when I was auditioning, they were like, do you have a problem going blonde? Of course I don't. So the first thing they did was they set up some time for me in the. I wish we had visuals. They set up some time for me in the hair department. And Listen, I am not about shitting on people's hard work, but I'm about to. So I spent many hours in that hair room getting some hair color. And and I pop out for a smoke break. And I'm sitting outside smoking, and Travis.
Here I come.
Travis walks up.
Walking down.
I believe what he said to me was, quote, "Oh, baby girl."
What was the state of your hair when
Ronald Travis, McDonald
Ronald
red?
McDonald red.
Huh?
Why? How did
she started crying?
I did. Did she, I?
You were upset.
I was. I had been crying. I think I had been crying, and you were kind of getting the aftermath of it. And
well,
you maybe went to the bathroom and cried.
You were upset, and you were afraid to say something. And
well, yeah.
I remember saying to you, "Oh no, you go in there right now, and tell him you're not going on camera looking like Ronald McDonald."
Right.
And you were so thankful. You said, oh, you think I can do that? And yeah. I said, yes, absolutely. This is your hair. And I said, they've messed up my hair so many times. Don't worry about it. Go in there and tell them. Fix it.
Well, okay, that's funny.
And Lisa would have said the same thing. Lisa would have been furious.
Hold on, though. It's funny that that was your takeaway from that conversation, because I do remember that, but the stuff that I remember most about that conversation is you giving me shit about my car. He asked me, do you have a car yet? I mean, after we got over the hair thing, you were like, do you have a car yet? And I was like, yeah, I have a 1985. I just bought this 1985 Mercedes. And you were like, no, that's no, you can't. And I was like, well, it's done. And
I'm very practical in my car buying.
Well, it was used.
Yeah, it was used. And he was a dad.
Probably even diesel. Back then.
It was not diesel. It was a good car. And I think I had to call you on your whatever the fuck Jetta you had. Did you have a Jetta?
I don't know. Jetta.
Yeah.
Nice.
Hey, you got a Jetta. Great car boring, in Los Angeles.
Very boring car. So I remember you talking about my car. And then I also remember, I remember thinking, oh God, look at what I look like. And this guy is here and he's seeing me look like this. And I can do one of two things. I can completely throw my vanity out the window and not give a shit because this is a person I'm going to see all the time. And, I'm very intimidated by his face, but I can't get bogged down in my own shit. Or I can just be insecure all the time when I see him, knowing that the first times, that we're hanging out, I look like Ronald McDonald. And at that moment, I was just like, from here on out, I don't give a shit. I don't give a shit what I look like. I don't care about this guy judging me. I just, it's going to be way too much energy to put forth. So
I liked about you.
Well, I made it. Was a split second decision, and I went the right way, I think. Because otherwise I would have been so insecure around you. I mean, you were so who you were. You were just this like fucking matinee idol. And I, was this like scrawny, like, well, okay. What is he writing? What are you writing down? Ben's like shaking his head, making notes.
Writing matinee idol.
Okay. The paranoia is still
it's
here.
It's still here. That's how he got me.
After hearing Natalie tell that story again, regarding Travis's face, I have to agree, it can be very intimidating when you meet someone that handsome. I met him 13 years ago for the first time, and his face was at the height of its powers, and it's one of those faces that both attracts you and makes you angry in equal measure. Very, very puzzling, confusing experience. We have a lot of fun making this show, and many, 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 many laughs. And occasionally, and I like this, the show drifts into a little bit deeper consideration of what the effect of a show like Passions is on the audience and on the culture that is absorbing it. And what the effect of the show was on Travis and Natalie, for example, and what they took away from it at the time, and more importantly, what they're taking away from it upon review, upon looking at it again as just older, wiser, presumably people. Here's a couple of clips where they talk about the characters on the show, things that they've noticed about the characters later, of late, and some discussion of some of the deeper psychological aspects of being a performer on a show and in a medium that puts such a premium on physical appearance.
But here's something, going back to Teresa, this poor child, she is, she's growing up in this episode. That's what this is about. She's got this secret about Ethan, and here she is. She's always followed her heart, and everyone around her is manipulating the world to keep her out of it. And she's struggling here with this secret, because I found that really interesting from looking at it 20 years later.
From a socioeconomic standpoint.
Here is this girl who's like, why can't I do this? I found something that will help Ethan, and I love him, so this seems natural. And then this, you know, reality of her mom's like, no, 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 you can't do that. And right. then you go to the Cranes and the Hotchkisses, and they're like, we got to get rid of Teresa. We got to manipulate the world. It was very
interesting. That's good soapy stuff. That is good soapy stuff. Yeah.
And, you know, I just thought, like, how the whole town was against Teresa.
Yeah.
Even her friend Whitney's like, forget it.
Yeah.
And I was like, it clicked for me in that moment. This is why everyone loves Teresa.
Right.
Because she is so that underdog, the ultimate underdog that we all just feel like every day in America.
Yeah.
You know, which is, we're realizing, is a reality.
I totally get that.
Yeah. 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 I thought that was kind of fun.
Yeah. It really does make sense.
Also, it's just such a boring concept that the wealthy people just manipulate the world. I mean, they don't, right? Right, I mean, like, they don't keep things from us.
It is
like
a science fiction soap opera.
Right.
It's not based,
I mean, that's
in
so far from the truth that wealthy people manipulate everything in the world.
Yeah, I don't know where they got that, that's but crazy. You know,
yeah,
they're good. Such they're good writers cliche. After all, I guess. Yeah,
they're looking out for us.
Yep. I would like to, if you don't mind, I would like to get into some sort of social commentary about this relationship between Gwen and Ethan, and how it echoes throughout this entire, not necessarily genre, but this particular show. And this is the first time I've seen of it in the three episodes we've watched. So it's gonna be pervasive. It goes something like this, where Ethan says, "I don't want to be with you, Gwen," and Gwen says, "I know that, but I still want to marry you."
Right.
And how that is not a fucking thing. That's simply not a thing. You don't say to somebody, listen, this is not something I want anything to do with. We need to be over. We need to move on. And the other person says, that's cool, but I love you and I still want to marry you and I'm just going to hang out. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. You don't say that in that way. You say it in your head. You say, oh,
exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. And also to take that a little bit further, and the reaction from him shouldn't be, okay, cool. It needs to be, no, I don't think you're understanding me. We need to get to the bottom of this.
We are not going to have a bath.
This is sort of...
But...
Therein lies...
I will take a BJ.
Which is...
So you're saying just oral. Right. Is that what you're saying?
I'm not going to marry you, but I'll do oral.
But the code for that in the show is the neck massage. I mean,
well, I do my social commentary bullshit, I will get to the neck massage. Okay. This
not bullshit.
This is not bullshit, and this is what started my descent into needing to not be on this show anymore.
Okay.
I did not have a daughter at that point. I had some nieces, some young nieces, and I became really aware of the message that was being sent, because again, it wasn't just these two characters. It happens. I think there are probably off the top of my head, four or five characters in which this happens. And it's always, I believe somebody, listeners, correct me if I'm wrong, it's always the man in power, the man who's the one who's saying, no, thank you. And the woman saying, okay, I know you don't want to be with me, but that doesn't matter. I'm going to be with you anyway. I found from a Soap Digest, it was April 3rd, 2001. Somebody, I don't know this person's gender, I can probably guess. It's initials, the initials PT from Salisbury, Maryland, wrote in, I can't believe that females still watch the show Passions. I'm not talking about the repetitive phrases or overacted scenes. I'm referring to Teresa and Gwen's constant ranting, without Ethan, my life is over. Is that a message we want to send to young women? That they need a man to make their life complete. Let me check my calendar, because I could have sworn it's 2001, not 1951. Here's a tip for Ethan's lovelies. Get a life and move on, because if their world crumbles when he breaks up with them, what's going to happen when he dies, comes back to life again? Because it is a soap, after all. PT, we're best friends.
You know,
best friends.
I think PT is out there protesting.
I think PT is.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
Fan. I also wrote, basically, come on, Gwen, if he chooses Teresa, that's a deal breaker and should be.
Oh, yeah. Look at you. Yeah. Putting down some real solid ground rules.
Well, I'm just saying I agree with you.
It's Ben's way of saying I agree.
And right PT. On. Yeah. I don't remember having read that letter, because why would I have, I guess. But I wish I had seen that when I was going through it, because I did sometimes feel like I was a crazy person. I was, you know, the sane person in the asylum.
because no one else seemed to think that this was as egregious as I was. And there was a lot of frustration for me in terms of representing. Mm-hmm. And I didn't necessarily call myself a feminist back then or identify with any kind of feminist tendencies, but obviously I was.
Sure.
And my burgeoning feminism was just really trying to claw its way out. So, well, so yeah. So eventually Ethan gets into a bath, finally. Yeah. Gwen somehow gets him into a bath.
A bath that looks like a shower. I took a shower.
Right.
Because everybody washes their hair in their bath water.
Well, Reagan does.
Our child
does. The four-year-old does.
Right.
I'm not sure Ethan.
Ethan does.
Ethan has a lot in common with
four-year-olds. He's a bath guy.
Yeah. So Ethan comes out, and Travis is naked from the waist up and has bath hair. And Travis said to me, What did you think about that scene? What did you think about my body in that scene? And I said, "Son, I'm not looking at your body. I'm looking at the moneymaker." Like, I was all about the face.
I remember that the producers were telling Galen and James to get me to the gym. And Galen confesses to me much later, like before I left, and I was like, "Are you fucking kidding me?" They're like, "Oh no, they were always." Telling us to try to get you to the gym. That's why we were always.
Do you remember them asking?
Oh, yeah. Because there was a gym on the CBS Radford lot. And I eventually started working with a trainer that was giving me creatine. And I discovered that when I work out that much and take creatine, I get puffy.
Oh.
I don't get definition. So I, towards the end of the seasons, towards the end of my career on that show, I just look fatter.
Listeners, can you look up what creatine is and email me and let me
know? Creatine is like a hormone that is supposed to make your muscles develop faster.
So you're on steroids.
So yeah, it's a type of steroid. But at the same time, I was taking this Harvard, what is it? Harvard medical people came out with a
Harvard medical people.
Yeah, I get that TM. Magazine.
Harvard Medicine. Harvard Medicine. Harvard Medicine. Harvard
Medicine. You mean HMP?
Yeah.
Harvard medical people.
They came out with a study that said it actually fucks up your heart. So I stopped doing it.
Well, at least it but didn't make your dick fall.
I was like, wow, here I was. I was looking pretty good. I thought I looked pretty good. But apparently I wasn't beefcakey enough.
You looked beautiful. You look great. Your face is mesmerizing, sir.
But in my mind, I was like this waify little 12-year-old boy walking around and just, you know, well, the producer's going, God, he's so skinny.
That's your dysmorphia. Yeah, you've that's your.
Oh, yeah, I got it.
I have body dysmorphia the other way.
Of course you have.
I have reverse body dysmorphia. I'm like, I look so good. And then I'll see pictures. I'll be like, oh, shit. Oh, shit. Why didn't anyone tell me? Obviously, this is a theme in my life.
Hey, guys, it's Natalie. Just wanted to wish everyone a happy new year and happy holidays and a much, much better 2021. Although I know that there are people out there who had a great 2020. Love to chat with you, see how that went and get your serotonin levels and see maybe if I can inject some of those into my body. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for listening. This sort of started as a lark and we couldn't have anticipated. How much people are enjoying it. So there's more to come in 2021, which rhymes. I love you.
So without question, the biggest event of our first season was when we had Mackenzie Westmore, Passions Sheridan, on for a two-part Zoom interview, which garnered the biggest and most feedback, and most varied feedback of any of the episodes that we did this year. Mackenzie was extraordinarily forthcoming and super generous with her honesty and revelations about what it was like to be on the show. So I just took one large clip from the first half of that two-part interview and inserted it in here. It's about 10 minutes, but it's just filled with honesty and imagery and information. Just a mind-blowing to me amount of stuff about being a woman doing this job. It's rare and terrific stuff. And because this is a section that we're doing a bit on Mackenzie, I decided to throw in a couple of other clips where Trav and Nat talked about other performers on the show. So here's Travis talking about working with Don Swaby and what he observed of Don trying to make the most out of a writing staff that didn't know how to write for an African-American man. And here's also some stuff about Ben Masters, who those guys could talk about forever. Everybody loved him. No one can find him. When I started watching Passions for this show, I was like, who is this guy? He's awesome.
I will say the only like funeral one that was a trippy one was the Sheridan funeral when they did kill Sheridan. And I think you were still there, Travis, through that stuff.
Yeah, we were.
I remember for whatever reason, they couldn't, I don't know why, but they couldn't edit putting like closing the casket and then letting me out and then putting it underneath. They had me in the casket. They closed the lid and then they lowered me down into what they created like a ground. And I remember laying in there. I had no mic. I had no communication with anybody. And I thought, I can do this. I'm good. I can do this. And I'll never forget hearing the dirt being dropped onto the top. And all of a sudden I had a panic attack and I couldn't get out. And I remember screaming and I remember pounding on that thing. And thank God for Rodney Van Johnson, because he was the only one that heard me. And I heard him say, hey guys, cut. I think I hear Mackenzie screaming. And he was the one that got yelled cut and they got me out and I was in tears. I just was like, I can't, I'm done. I'm out. That was one of the first of like, seriously guys, do I really have to do some of these things? When you're talking about some of the stuff that happened after you left, I would say the first like big, like really traumatic thing was I was newly married. You know, I met him on the show. We were married in 3 dates. It was, a really quick one in wedding.
Yeah.
In Vegas. And we had gotten pregnant, right? Pretty quick. And I remember this was around the time they had Sheridan in a pit, kidnapped by Beth, pregnant. So they were writing both my pregnancy and the character's pregnancy at the same time. Sadly, for what I went through, I actually miscarried on a plane ride from New York to Los Angeles the entire 6 hours in the back of the plane, in a bathroom, in the worst turbulence I'd ever experienced. So that set up a bad flying experience for me, amongst many other things.
Sure.
I remember getting back and being the trooper that I am, I said, nope, I can get to set. I can go right back to work. I remember being on set and passing out. I remember being on like in the middle of a scene and passing out, and they had to call the ambulance. I got to the hospital. Well, apparently the, I'm just trying to think of like the best way to term this, word this.
Right.
The tissue. It didn't finish. It didn't. Right. You know, it didn't pass through. And I was devastated. I was 4 months along and I was devastated because I really wanted a child. Mm-hmm. And I remember going to the hospital. They didn't have time to give me any anesthesia. They had to do a DNC, an emergency DNC. And I just remember the doctor, I slapped back my face and just trying to keep me awake because I just wanted to pass out. The pain was so bad. Wow. So that's my own thing. Going back to set, they continued on with the pregnancy storyline, I guess, because they couldn't rewrite it. So they continued on and they had my character then in the pit with the pregnancy thing. And I remember there was one scene where they thought it'd be a good idea to for the viewers to think that Sheridan might lose the baby. So I remember them pouring fake blood on my crotch. And this was only maybe a month after losing my own child.
And they knew
about it. Obviously. Oh yeah. They knew because they had to call the ambulance to get me there. They knew everything that happened. And so, but I did it and I got through it. And, you would think there would almost be something cathartic. If it had continued to be and that Sheridan lost the baby, I lost my baby. Okay. You know, psychologically we move on, but then they kept the baby. And where it got really difficult was it was like another month after that, they had Sheridan give birth. And that's where I mentally lost it because I remember holding a little baby in my arms only a few months after having lost my own child. And thinking, oh my God, this is what I should be experiencing right now. And I'm not. Mm-hmm. And that was the most painful thing I've ever dealt with in my life.
Mackenzie,
I hope it was
Wow.
It was tough. That was really rough. I would go to my dressing room every day after filming and I would cry for a good hour before I could go home and get my car because I couldn't drive. I couldn't drive with the crying that I was doing. So I would sit up in my dressing room and just cry and go home, go about my day and just try and find life again.
Well, because it was a daily reminder for you.
Yeah.
You know, miscarriages, full disclosure, I too have had a miscarriage and it's something that it never goes away. You never recover from it, but to have it be so in your face that way has got to just, it's daily. Basically an open wound that will never, ever, ever close.
Close.
I think it would have been probably very humane of them to let Sheridan lose the baby.
I wish they had, and I don't know. I mean, I know that they had like a whole Bible of stories, and I know they had their direction. But yeah, you're right; they can. And I wish that they had for the amount of therapy that I needed after that, and the amount of stress that I went through. It was super super difficult, and it just
felt
a bunch of other things that rolled out after that.
Yeah.
It took a long, long time to even begin to try and recover from something like that. And that's why when I got pregnant then with Maddox, I was terrified because thought, oh my God, am I going to go through this again? And, I just was so thrilled when I had him and they just had to keep hiding my stomach. And, and that was a whole other issue because there was so much that went on with both pregnancies. Because with the first one, I don't know if you guys know this, but because you don't, Natalie, you don't want to say when you're pregnant the first couple of months. You don't talk about it because you don't know. First 3 months, you always stay quiet. I remember getting called up to the office and I was maybe at the 2 to 3 month mark, like right around there. And I remember getting called to the office and being said, you're fat.
No.
Oh my God.
No, that didn't happen.
Yeah. Yep.
I was thinking that's where you were going. And I was like, there's
no
way.
I know. I thought that's what you were doing, but oh my God.
And I had to say,
God.
Listen,
I'm very angry
right
now.
Oh my God.
Sorry, Travis. I know it almost like chokes me up because I think back to these things and it's like, God, I remember that moment. I remember sitting in the office and saying, okay, I need to let you know I'm pregnant. Yeah. I'm not fat.
And
I'm pregnant.
They took that away from you. They took your privacy away and they took away the, obviously it wasn't. I was going to say it wasn't malicious, but you know what? It might have been. That's shitty.
Who knows?
That's
shitty. It sucked.
That's a horrible experience to have to go through.
It really was. And especially too, like I look back on, I wasn't the thinnest of the actresses on the show. And I know that. And it was rubbed in my face quite often.
By
whom? Either by production or even fans. I would get a lot of, on the message boards, I would get a lot of, you're a whale. You should not even be on the show.
I have never met anyone in better shape than you still. And I haven't seen you in like 15 years. I'm just saying that to be real.
No, but I will say, on the show, I definitely had my ups and downs, but in the grand scheme of life, to call someone a size 6 fat is not acceptable at all. That is not acceptable on any terms or any level. And that was probably the biggest I got was, around there. And I just remember being in shock that, I was the fat one of the show.
I can't, really my mind is so blown.
And I would get so upset. I remember too, I would be so jealous whenever I'd be so upset when I would read the script and see that I had a scene, especially with Lindsay. Because she's 5 feet tall.
The size of my 4-5-year-old daughter.
She's the size of my calf.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and I'm 5'8", and to stand next to her, I felt like a gargantuan. Like, I really felt like, all right, they just put Tubbo next to the twig. And that's what would be reflected on the message boards from some fans of, Teresa's the beautiful one and the skinny one. And why are you even on this show? You should just like quit now.
That really blows my mind because I thought, I mean, we're all fucked up, but like I would look at you guys and I'd be like, they're so beautiful. And they make me change every time I look nice. They would make me like go change.
You were not pretty on that show.
I was not. No, it's fine. I'm over it. But
okay. I thought you were stunning.
Well,
you're another one that I was like, oh my God, she's so skinny. Why can't I be as skinny as Natalie?
It was chain smoking and living on Coors Light. I mean, that's all it was.
You're also a little one.
I am a little one.
Lindsay.
You're petite. And you know, the other thing too, that this was my screw up, is that before I got married and pregnant, I was dating actually a guy that was a former Mr. Olympia. And we had this whole routine. I mean, freaking Mr. Olympia, he was huge, but we would go to the gym every day. We would lift heavy weights. We would do our coffee and our aspirin and our, you know, the whole formation, the concoction that you do for bodybuilding. And I remember that I was big. I was really gaining because I loved it. I loved weight training.
Yeah.
I loved lifting with this guy. And I put on a good 20 pounds. The only problem was we did the Atkins diet together and I gained 20 pounds, which really pissed me off because he lost weight and I gained. And that was another time they called me to the office and said, "You're fat again. Lose weight."
Sorry.
Do you want me to go to somebody's house with like a baseball bat?
I'm going to get up.
You gotta write some names down.
I don't think there's a statute of limitations on any of this shit. No. Did you want to talk about Dawn?
Yeah. One of the things that I remembered watching this, Dawn and I used to joke a lot about his dialogue.
Dawn Swaby, who played
Chad. He had his work cut out for him because his dialogue was written by a group of over 40-year-old white people, and they were trying to write a character. I think they were trying to write a character that was, you know, from the streets, black guy, you know, street smart. And they would write this dialogue for him, and Dawn would just be like, "Can you believe this stuff?" And I remember reading when we get the scripts, I'm like, "This is so bad. Just no one would talk this way, and they're trying to recreate this vernacular, this like urban accent." And Dawn would everyone would laugh at it. And he would do every once in a while he'd do like his white voice. He'd be like, "Hey, this is Chad and I've got some stuff to say." I mean, we had a lot of fun with it. And I also remember, you know, he complained about it. We all complained about stuff, you know, Natalie, me, Dawn for sure. And Dawn complained a lot about it because what I didn't realize at the time is all the extra work he was doing. Because it was one of those things where we're like, "Yeah, I know, Dawn, it's upsetting. I get it." But, you know, it's like, we're past that, right? Like,
we just got to show up and do it.
We just got to show up and do it. And that was just me being like a privileged white guy. I realized that, no, this is something he had to do every day. And he was working twice as hard as everyone else.
Because he had to fix the dialogue.
Because he had to fix the dialogue. So he read the dialogue, then he had to fix the dialogue, and then he had to learn it that way. And then he'd have to go in and do it.
And then he would probably get corrected and have to somehow work in, like find the happy medium of like, okay, I'll give them a little bit, but I need to.
Right. Well, Dawn did stick to his guns about that. He was like, "No, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. This is the way.
Good for him.
This is the way Chad talks. Yeah. Okay. That's it." Which I really admired.
Yeah.
And
can we get him on the show?
I'd love to.
Yeah, I it would be fun to get him on the show. But yeah, I just like watching this and then realizing it and then realizing like, oh my God, I was all like, "Get over it, Dawn." And here I am. Like, he was working harder than everybody else. And it just shows you what it's like to be a black actor in Hollywood and like what you're dealing with.
Yeah, the extra and shit that you have
extra
to
extra shit that you have to do.
Through. Yeah.
Because he wanted to do so much with his character. He wanted to make him down to earth. He wanted to make him real. And he wanted to have a real story because this was unique to this show.
Well, he was also one of the actors on the show. You know, a lot of the people they got were really inexperienced and hadn't done a lot of training. And he was one of those who had trained. He was a theatrically trained actor. You guys did a play together.
Yeah, we did a play together.
Yeah.
Stoppard.
Wasn't Lindsay part of that?
Yeah. Yeah. Lindsay, me and Dawn did a play together.
Do you only do Stoppard plays?
Yep.
I guess so.
It's in his contract. I would really, really love to talk about Julian.
Yeah.
I could spend an entire episode talking about Ben Masters.
Yeah. I mean, we were watching this and Amy was kind of in and out of the room and she said, "Is he the bad guy?"
So did Reagan. Reagan said the same thing.
Yeah. What gave you that idea?
the 5-year-old knew too. Yeah. So I'm watching these episodes from obviously a very different perspective in terms of like
age and experience and what I've learned as an actor, and the amount of appreciation that I have for Ben Masters, who plays Julian Crane, for Kim Ulrich, who plays Ivy, and for Andrea Evans, who plays Rebecca. I was just not paying attention. I was in my own shit. I was like sucked in by my whole youthful bullshit, whatever I was doing, and had no idea that what they were doing was like, it was so good. It was, I don't want to use the word genius because it's passions.
It's the curse of youth. You know, yeah. We struggled so much doing that stuff. And because of their experience and their age, they had been working for years.
Yeah.
They knew exactly what to do with this kind of material. And I think that's why Ben stands out so much, because he just had so much fun. Mm-hmm. And what Natalie and I talked about after we were watching, we were like, oh my God, they're so good, because they're not trying to make it something it's not. They're not fighting the genre.
Yeah.
They're not fighting the genre. They're not trying to be the Marlon Brando of the soap opera world. This isn't like their first big gig on television. They've been around. They're accomplished. And they're enjoying the part.
They're not trying to prove anything.
And they're not trying to prove anything. And Ben had so much fun with the ascot. And
I have that note here.
The cocktail.
Three colors. And the book. And at one point he's just reading a fucking book. What are you reading?
Well, because so many times they put you in a scene and you're standing around doing nothing. And Ben would say, I'm going to have a book here with a drink. Empty. And he's just like, I'm talking to Rebecca and I'm looking at Ethan. And it's just, it works, because he's just, it makes your eye draw to him.
I don't
want to
watch anything else but him when there's
so kooky yet creepy yet charming.
I think what I had said to you.
These last couple of clips I threw in because they are the ones to me that really let you know who these three people, Nat, Trav, and Ben, who they are. There's some weird shit in here about Tom Cruise functioning in low orbit. There's some stuff. There's a bit, the fuck, marry, kill with corporate mascots. There's Nat's plan on living inside of a book in her mind. And then the final clip is, you know, I think it's like 4 minutes long, but it pretty much sums up everything that you need about these three people and their relationship to one another in a nutshell, in my opinion. If you ever wanted to know who they were, just listen to that clip. Love and peace to everyone. Please stay safe. Please enjoy the rest of whatever kind of holiday you're having. Take care, all.
So I go on this like yearly ranch trip with some guys, and we had an interesting. Are you guys familiar with the game Fuck, Marry, Kill?
Yes.
We had an interesting game of Fuck, Marry, Kill. I would like to get your guys' opinion. So you have the Kool-Aid Man. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know who
you have Mr. Keebler, the head elf, and Pillsbury Doughboy. Fuck, Mary Kill.
Ben looks horrified. Ben looks genuinely horrified.
These are foods.
No, they're not.
They're people. They're characters. It was just a fun little thing. Maybe we'll just leave it up to the listeners.
Just kidding. I thought that would really land.
No, it is. No. So you're asking us.
You're confused.
No, I'm not. I was just thinking about it. Who I would kill, who I'd marry, and who I'd fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a tough one, right?
Well, Pillsbury Doughboy is the fuckable one.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's problematic.
Because you can mold it. And that works.
This is what I'm talking about. You learn a lot about people.
Because you can mold it for whatever you want. It's customizable.
It's customizable,
is customizable, or hit.
Yeah, it.
Kills
it.
Kool-Aid Man.
Everybody wants to kill the Kool-Aid Man. I don't think,
What is it? He walks into your house.
He's dangerous.
Knocks your doors down, walls down.
He breaks your wall, and he's also kind of just a loudmouth.
He's a loudmouth.
He's a real dick.
Have you ever seen that guy drunk? Not cool.
I think he's always drunk. I mean, he runs into the wall.
Yeah, that's true.
He's on a crazy sugar high all the time.
It's like, dude, just try the doorknob.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then so that leaves Mary for the...
Because you're going to eat great.
You're going to eat great.
You're going to eat cookies all the time.
I think that's a pretty universal choice.
Yeah.
For all three of those.
Not as controversial as I thought it would have been.
Well, yeah. But you might you just have to be going to jail for, you know, having sex with an underage Pillsbury Doughboy.
He's a boy.
He doesn't look like he's been around for a while.
Well, that's what they all say. Okay, good. I'm really glad we got the old Hollywood talk out of the way.
Yeah, that right. Probably well,
you know,
not last.
Speaking of Hollywood, I had this thought the other day, and I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but I read or I heard about the rumor that the next Mission Impossible is they're going to shoot some of it in space.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard this?
Yes.
With Tom Cruise going to space. And I kind of went off. I might have had an edible.
Or two.
One doesn't do the job.
Not anymore.
But I had this thought of if he's up there, how dangerous that is. Yeah. And, you know, I started thinking about who would back that? What insurance would back that kind of project? And just how does he do it? Is he going to train as an astronaut?
You're such an accountant, son, by the way. What insurance company is going to back Tom Cruise going to space?
My father was an accountant.
Won't be Geico.
I get a little producerial every once in a while, but I was just thinking about how hard it would be to make all that happen. And then if he gets in space and something happens to him, like he, you know, gets out of the spacecraft and loses his oxygen and dies.
How dare you?
Yeah, I know. Because that's a really dangerous thing. I mean, he does dangerous stuff in that movie anyways.
He loves it. He loves doing dangerous
stuff. But then I just thought, like, I just imagine this kind of 2001 Space Odyssey moment where he's just floating around in like a low orbit around
like forever
around the Earth. And
that is, though, if you think about it, that's sort of the Scientologist wet dream.
Come true, yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I thought he would be okay with that. Like he would be like, yeah.
Oh, he would love that.
Because he would be a star.
A satellite.
Because you could at night, you'd be like, look, yeah. Yeah. Look, there's Tom Cruise. See that?
He's trying to think of ways he can be an even bigger star than
right.
he already is.
Like, he's like, what's the worst case scenario?
I'm literally a star.
I'm literally a star.
I'm in the sky. Yes.
I like the twist on that. You really brought it back to a sweet place. Yeah.
Right. I thought maybe that's why he's doing it. He's like, what's the worst thing that can happen? I'm the first.
I think you're giving him too much credit. I don't know that he's thinking that far ahead. He's not an accountant, son, that I know of.
Well, I mean, you got to think ahead if you're going to space. It's kind of important.
Yeah, but if you're Tom Cruise, do you?
I don't know. That's a really good question because maybe people are like, yeah, I'll take you up there. Let's go.
Yeah.
I'd like, Travis, for you to tell us the time frame. Like, you took an edible. And then, let's say, I assume around 9 o'clock, Natalie went to bed.
Right.
Your assumption would be correct.
True. So, it was just like, at what point did you wrap up the whole conversation in your head?
So, I kissed Natalie goodnight at 9 o'clock. The French kiss. And then at 9:01, I had the thought. And then at 9:02, it was done.
Really?
Yeah. That's how
edibles work. Efficient you are with your.
Jeez. I mean, the way you're describing it, it was like I could see you journaling about it and like doing a little bit of research.
This stuff I really like because I can go, you know, time warp in a small amount of time.
All in the noggin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I've started doing a thing. That's not true. I'm going to start doing a thing. And I can't recommend it because I don't think it's going to work.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to.
This bodes very well.
Okay.
So you know how when you're reading a book and the characters are in a really shitty situation. It's usually a hangover, to be honest. Like the characters are there's a character that's hungover, and the hangover is described in a way that makes it sound almost romantic, and it's so much more interesting than hangovers actually are. And
romanticizing like
everything. Yeah.
Okay.
And you think to yourself, well, and next time I'm hungover, I'm just gonna pretend like I'm in a book.
You Okay.
Wow. Wow.
But meaning not that I was using a hangover as an example. So I want to try when I'm in it, because we're all in a shitty place right now, obviously, just as
Not great.
The country. Not great days. Yeah. And the world, really, just with the pandemic.
Mostly America.
Mostly America. And I struggle mentally and emotionally with what's going on. I think we all do. And sometimes I think, well, if I were a character in a book, this would be so much more interesting. And so I'm going to pretend.
The book 1984. Right. Wow. That guy was not
I'm just, when I'm having a bad day, I'm just going to see if it works. I don't think it's going to.
You're
going to
use your imagination.
I'm going to.
I think that's called transcendence.
It's something. It's something psychological.
Now I encourage this.
Right? I think it'll be fun for, I don't, I actually
It'll be
don't.
Fun for the. For the household.
Oh, wow.
So that's my new plan, guys. I'm going to pretend like I'm in a book.
Okay, let's do it.
All the time.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Hey, everyone. Happy holidays. It's Travis here. I just hope everyone has a safe and joyful time and a happy new year. I'm one of those people that looking forward to 2020 disappearing. Forever. And this morning I was trying to think of like a passions Christmas thing that happened, like a memory from the show. And I mean, you guys know how that works. Like, I need Natalie. She's not here. So, a lot of cobwebs. But there was two memories that came up. One that wasn't Christmas. It was Thanksgiving, the first year I was on the soap, and we did the Thanksgiving Day parade in New York. And that was pretty wild because it was freezing and we were on a float for like 4 hours. And I remember I couldn't feel my feet, my fingers, anything. But it was so funny because I was standing next to Dalton, who played Hank at the time, and people were screaming at him, being like, "You're a bad man. You're a bad man." And we joked because Galen and I and James were like, "We're not going to stand next to you on the next block because people might start throwing stuff." And the other memory I had is when I was coming home during that time on the show, and I I think I had a threesome, but that's not holiday stuff. So I'm just going to stick with that first one. So, goodbye 2020. And 2021, let's, be better. Just be better. Everybody, let's all be better. Happy holidays.
Fellas, does Gwen have bangs or doesn't she?
In this episode, she has both.
Thank you. That's not a thing. You fucking have bangs or you don't.
It's very, I noticed it.
It's a your, there's a real in between thing at, going on
at your house, at the Hotchkiss house, and then your hair at the
bang watch,
and then there's episode. There's the outfit.
We can get on. We can talk about the outfit in a second, but what I do want to say about the bangs or lack thereof, or some kind of tweener issue we have going on, is it's as if they didn't know hairdressing 101 about the cowlick. You need to understand how to tame the cowlick if you want to do bangs, and they were just like, "Oh, this cowlick doesn't exist. It's not a thing." So
just slack it down.
Just, or not, maybe half of it. Just do, let's have the best of both worlds.
Just cut it.
Let's not shit or get off the pot. Yeah, just cut it. Just give a baby bang. And the other thing is, men hate bangs. So I had no help. You don't like them.
We we have discussed fashion before, and we don't always see eye to eye here. But
no, there is women's fashion. There is men's fashion, for sure.
I like Julie Christie.
She was, that's an exception because it was a different era. And also she had, like, she went for it. If you're going to do bangs, go for it. Don't go, don't half-ass the bang.
Yeah.
Did bangs a few years ago.
Okay. I did do bangs a few years ago. You want to talk about this?
Sure.
Wait, Zooey Deschanel.
No.
Yeah.
She's not.
I'm okay.
She's not a guy's girl, though. She's a girl's girl.
But what does that matter about liking bangs or not?
I'm saying men don't like bangs.
Are you saying sex appeal, like attractive?
Yes. Yeah. No man is like, "Ooh, what is sexy?"
I disagree with that. Guys are pretty much like, "Ugh, yeah, what? Her hair? I don't know."
I'm just saying the bang is not going to be the thing that makes the bang.
Okay. So
the bang is not the thing that gets the bang.
Right.
Right.
Thank you for fixing that. You want to talk about the bangs? You want to talk about the bangs? You want to talk about the bangs from 10 years ago?
10 years ago.
Yeah. You're still upset about this?
I'm not upset about it.
Did you guys know that my nickname in film school was Benji Bang Bang?
No.
Because of your bangs?
No, I didn't know that.
Oh, because you did it. You fucked a lot.
No. I wish it was that interesting.
You were the whore of the department.
There was another film student who liked to give people nicknames, and they were not creative nicknames.
That guy.
Oh. No, it was a woman.
Is it our president?
Oh, that lady.
And for example, I had a classmate named Paul. So she called him Polly Paul.
No.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, she did.
Oh, my God.
What do you think she named her children? For me, I don't know why she called me Benji Bang Bang.
And then, it should have been Benji Ben Ben, right?
Yeah, it should have been, but it was Benji Bang Bang. And then people latched onto it and shortened it to just Bang Bang. So, and I never had a nickname in my life except in film school for those 2 years.
Ugh.
Well, and
it's going to happen again.
Awful.
Bang Bang.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
Jeez, Polly, Paul. Like, no, try it again.
No.
Try it again. No.
That was your rough draft.
You don't stick with that one. That's your first one.
That was it.
Oh, yeah. God.
Benji Bang Bang.
Well, sorry, I didn't want to derail the conversation.
Don't ever.
There's a fight brewing between you, so I wanted to de-escalate.
Yeah, Ben doesn't like it when we fight.
Just keeps talking around it. Just say what happened.
I got bangs, and they were adorable because they were the Julie Christie type of bangs.
And what did I do?
You did not like them.
Yeah, that's all. That's the story.
Well, I don't remember these bangs.
Big deal.
You were not around for these bangs.
It took too long to get to that point.
Yeah. So my case in point, men don't like bangs.
Okay.
So if you're going to do it, do it. If you're not, that was my only issue.
You're beautiful.
Thank you.
All the time.
Thanks. All right. And that's a good way to wrap the bang conversation.
But the bangs don't work.
Took it away.
The bangs don't work. I know.
Bangs lowered your...
Scratch this off the
list. My Q rating.
Your Q rating.
I went from a Hollywood 7 to a regular 7.
Right. It's never been your thing. Like, your hair has never been your thing.
How dare you?
All right.
Okay.
Guys.
How?
No more fighting.
Dare you?
I have another.
People don't watch The Detour and are like
for
talking about your hair.
Of course they do. No, but they did watch the following.
Ben is really trying to get
I'm trying to talk about the blue pantsuit.